Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, these are some pretty dark times right now.
They are?
Yeah.
What's dark?
We're on a five-game losing streak, dude.
Oh, I thought you meant like we're in December and there's not a lot of light.
No, dude. We're getting the game, dude.
Sorry. Excuse me. I'm in it now, dude. You're right.
I know. The Sharks have had a couple days off now. We haven't had time. We've had a little time to not obsess on this five-game losing streak.
Which took them out of first place in the division and the conference. It is now the Los Angeles Kings taking up the number one spot, who the Sharks managed to lose to.
Ouch.
Amongst the other four teams they've lost to on this five-game losing streak. Some of them in overtime, of course, but losses nonetheless.
These are not good things.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Kings are playing tonight, so actually it's a tie between the Kings and the Sharks going into the recording of this podcast, so we'll see. You know, if the Kings are leading, actually, I'm looking right now, they're leading 1-0. So it's not looking good. You know, it looks like LA is going to pull ahead tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure, is this necessarily a bad thing, this skid this early, dude? I mean, the Sharks haven't looked great in these last couple games. Are you nervous?
A little bit. I'm not really worried. As you said, this isn't the worst time in the world to go on a skid like this. You see other teams go on skids. You know, Detroit a couple years ago had a big skid in January. You know, these things kind of happen, and it's just a matter of, can the Sharks find a way to pull themselves out of it? Can they? It seems like they can't score goals. I was looking up in the five games where they lost, only once did they score more than two goals, and that was in the crazy shootout. Was it against LA?
It was. LA was the high-scoring game.
The 5-4, but all the other games, the Sharks scored two or less. So
yeah, well, Dallas seems to have figured out how to defend the Sharks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they've held them to two goals in both those games, I think. And then, you know, Phoenix also seems to have figured out how to defend the Sharks.
Well, Phoenix doesn't give up a lot of goals to anybody because they play just shutdown hockey for the most part. And Ilya Bryzgalov is playing almost as good as anybody in the NHL right now, maybe with the exception of Ryan Miller. He's one of the top three or four goalies right now. So, yeah, it's, you know, but these are teams the Sharks should beat. I mean, we can give them some credit, but the Sharks are the ones that are supposed to win these games, and they're just not. And these, you know, the shootout, you know, went to 11 rounds or whatever in Dallas. And I knew it was, we were going to lose. I mean, I turned to you, I'm getting this pessimistic. I turned to you in the third period. The Sharks were actually winning at the time. And I said, overtime. And sure enough, I was right. And if it gets to the shootout, I don't like the Sharks' chances.
Although Nabby played the best shootout rounds I've ever seen from him, and that probably brought his save percentage in the shootout way up. It was in the high 60s, so now I'm sure it's in the high 60s.
Right. In the higher 60s.
No, he's probably doing way better now. So I guess, you know, my take on it is, you know, everybody's got a slump, like you said. I guess I don't like the way that they're losing these games. I feel like, you know, losing to teams that are overachieving, I guess, you know, like Phoenix. I don't like the matchup with Dallas, a team that I feel like sort of like Sharks light. They just don't have, they're playing the same kind of up and down style. They outshot us. You know, Turco always seems to kind of own us. He gave up a really bad goal in that game.
Yeah, the Rob Blake goal. Yeah.
So, but these still are teams that they should still be beating. You
right.
know, Dallas, Phoenix. You know, LA, I think, has raised itself into that middle class of the top seeds in the division. You know, they're going to be a playoff team, no doubt. But Dallas and Phoenix, they're kind of on the bubble. You know, I know right now they would both be in right now, but those are teams that the Sharks should beat, you know, 4 out of 6 times, and they're really struggling against them right now.
I know, and we get to see Dallas again very soon, next Monday.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
And Chicago, right?
Yeah, Chicago next Tuesday. So
and it's going to be a tough stretch here. You know, coming in against the Ducks, we'll be looking for the Sharks to make a little bit of a statement. But let's not focus on the losing streak so much. We've got a big show today.
We do. EJ Raddick is back and better than ever.
Right. One of our honorary dudes.
Yes.
EJ talking to us on the car phone, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of great things to say about the Sharks, some things that we've been talking about already, and also, you know, some opinions on maybe where the Sharks need to go from here. So, dude, shall we roll the tape?
Let's roll it. All right, we are joined once again by our distinguished guest, EJ Raddick, who is a senior writer for ESPN the magazine. He blogs on ESPN.com and is an occasional host on NHL Live, the radio program on XM 204. EJ, thanks for coming back to talk to us.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Anybody who calls me distinguished, I really feel obligated to join, so thank you.
Hey, EJ, I don't know what you were up to last Saturday night around 1 a.m. your time, but if you heard like a loud scream, that was just Mike and I reacting to Dan Boyle being carried off the ice. That was a heart attack moment for us out here. I think the season could have been in serious reversal if that he had been out for a long period of time.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I wrote that the other day. I do an insider blog there for ESPN.com, and on Mondays I go through 10 things that I kind of observe from the weekend, and one of them was the fact that Boyle got hit. I think it was by Taylor Pyatt in the Phoenix game at the end of the game, and he ended up being, I guess, helped off, like you say. I thought it was interesting. The next day, you know, the Sharks have a great PR staff, I might add, but they, in local reports, they wanted to make it clear that Boyle was doing okay, that he was actually at the holiday party with the teammates and everything with his family. So, I mean, they wanted to go out of their way to make sure that people knew that it seems like the injury was not a significant one, but I'm with you guys. I mean, Dan Boyle, it doesn't get much more important on a team than that. And if Dan Boyle goes down, you know, I think you saw last year, particularly the beginning of the year, when Sergei Gonchar was out of the lineup for the Penguins for 60 or so games. I mean, that led to a very, very rocky start for the Penguins, and it led to eventually a coaching change. All's well that ended well for them, and he came back in the lineup. The coaching change paid off, and they ended up winning the Stanley Cup, but you lose those top key puck movers that are on the ice a lot and play on the power play and penalty kill and then key moment to the game. They are so, so hard to replace. So I hear you. That was definitely a moment to hold your breath and hope for the best.
Yeah, well, I think we dodged a bullet on that because they say it's not serious and he's just day-to-day.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we talked with you right after the wonderfully disappointing loss again by the Sharks in the playoffs. And you mentioned that a couple things that we thought were interesting about how the Sharks might improve the team. One thing you mentioned is how they might improve their bottom six forwards, which we kind of think they did. You mentioned maybe a backup goalie. And something that we've taken a keen interest to so far this season, maybe improving their blue line. Specifically, you said maybe they need to find a guy in that number two slot. I was wondering how you think the Sharks are doing in those areas and what maybe they can do to improve.
Well, it seems like they did go out and bring in a little bit more grit and a little bit more veteran kind of presence on the back end of their forward group. I mean, obviously they addressed the front end by trading for Danny Heatley, and they shook up their roster a little bit by moving, you know, a couple of guys in Jonathan Chichu and Milan Mihalik who were really, you know, homegrown guys there and who were part of that, you know, really a big part of that room. And so, you know, in moving two guys like that out, they do shake up the group a little bit, adding Heatley. I mean, certainly, you know, in the regular season, when you think of him and Joe Thornton together, I mean, that's a fantasy hockey match made in heaven, a passer and a shooter. I guess it's yet to be seen in postseason how, you know, when teams focus in a seven-game series, how those guys will do. But they did add some grit and some experience to the back end group of forwards. I mean, they went out with Manny Malholtra, and they've added Scott Nicol, and I think they've got, you know, Jed Ortmeier, I think, is out there too, if I'm not mistaken, although I could be wrong about that.
Nope, that's right.
I just remember him from being with the Rangers. He had a couple of good years with the Rangers. Really hard-working, kind of earnest guy, kill penalties, and, you know, just bring, you know, energy. That's what those guys can bring. And the Ultra has really been actually quite good in the beginning of the season here for San Jose from what I've seen. I still look at their defense guys, and I just... You know, that is an area of concern for me. I know that, you know, they feel better. They feel like Douglas Murray has really continued to move forward his career. I think, you know, Dan Boyle, you already know how I feel about him. I think Rob Lake is a great player, but I think, you know, if you're going to get into the playoffs and you're going to be asking Rob Lake to play 25 minutes, I think you know, that's a lot to ask. And, you know, I go back to the same player. When I think about the San Jose Sharks, as I think of Mark Edward Vlasic, I just think that he's got to be a guy that's ready for that next step. And when the game has become important and you need a guy to, you know, be in there and be in that 2-3 role of a defenseman, I mean, he has got to be a guy that they can play more, and it's got to be more effective in those moments. I mean, he played in that series against Anaheim last year, and he was, you know, you could say arguably he was their worst player. I mean, he really struggled, I thought, in that series amongst, you know, several guys who were kind of in and out during that series, but he really struggled. And for whatever reason, I've kind of, you know, based on their current lineup, unless they make some changes and add another player, on, which is going to be difficult when you consider the cap issues involved, you know, they need this guy who is a young veteran. I mean, he's only, what, 22 years old, and seems like he's been in the league forever already, but they need him to kind of make that next step and to play with more confidence and to be able to play at big moments in the game and to be able to, you know, that would enable them to kind of spot Rob Blake a little bit more and, you know, support him a little bit more, because I think he's still a really helpful player, as are a lot of veteran older guys like that. But when you ask those guys to do more than they are capable of in the present, I think that's where you can get into trouble. So, you know, when I look at the Sharks, I think they've made some improvements. Certainly, the Heatley addition is very, very interesting, but I think Mark Edward Vlasic is a key player for them, and I'm really be watching as they get down to the second half of the season and as we get into the playoffs, I mean, how he is performing.
We've been thrown around some names, so we totally agree with your insights on that, that the Sharks really do need to, you know, it's either Vlasic needs to step up or they need to get someone else. You know, they seem to have some players, you know, I guess signing an extension with Doug Wilson isn't necessarily a guarantee that you're going to be on the Sharks roster. Do you think Ryan Clough might be a bit of trade bait? And how about bringing in someone like Brian McCabe if the Florida Panthers go in the tank? Is that someone who might be able to help the Sharks?
I'm not a big Brian McCabe fan, and only like he's a guy that's really, I mean, he's got a big shot. He can help you in certain areas, but I find that watching him over the years, he doesn't always make the smart play in a key moment. And he's a guy I think that you can, you know, if you're in a seven-game series, teams can pick on. You know, he will turn the puck over. He will make a play sometimes that you kind of shake your head at. So, you know, again, he's been in the league a while, and, you know, supported, like most players, it's supported well. I mean, he can help you, but, you know, for me, that's not the kind of guy I would look for them. I mean, I think they need to get some, you know, they need, again, that area, that second pair kind of guy, because Dan Boyle is clearly a first pair guy, and then it just depends who you want to put with him. But, you know, someone in that, you know, who can play in that, you know, second pair, just as a little bit of an upgrade there, or to give Todd McCown a little bit more versatility, it's someone that I would look for. But again, I mean, I just think that those guys are hard to find. They're not usually available. And, you know, then you have to have the consideration of a salary cap and what you can, you know, what you can afford to give up. I mean, Ryan Clough, for example, if you're looking to move him, I mean, he's been a guy that, you know, he's kind of had ups and downs there. I mean, there's times I watch him and I think he's a helpful guy, and there's other times I watch him when he just looks like it's just a struggle for him. So, I don't know. I guess you got to also target the teams that are going to be out of it. There's so few of them now. But, I mean, you got to look at a team like Carolina who's, you know, really fallen out of things early in the year, and, you know, maybe there's a player there on defense, you know, that financially and on the ice fits kind of what you're looking for. I mean, a guy like Nicholas Vallin, for example, is not a... I don't know if he's exactly what I'm talking about when I say a second-pair guy, but he's an example of a depth guy who's a big man, who's helped win a Stanley Cup before, and even if he's a guy that you play in your third pair, or maybe you have just for depth reasons, I mean, maybe that's a guy that some trade deadline time you take a look at and see if he fits with what you're doing. But, I mean, that's the area, if I was Doug Wilson, that I'd be looking at carefully as we get, you know, through January, February, and towards the deadline, is how can I help my defense? How can I bring in, you know, guys? If not that second pair guy that I think they need, how can I at least address the depth issue? Because guys always get hurt in the playoffs, and it'll be nice to have some people ready to go if that, you know, if that happens.
Well, I'm sure another thing Doug Wilson will be thinking about this year is the fact that Patrick Marleau and Yevgeny Nabokov are both going to be unrestricted free agents. In your view, do you see either of these players possibly re-signing during the year? You think maybe that's a good move for Doug Wilson to approach? Or maybe should he wait till the offseason? And which of these players do you think are likely to actually come back?
Boy, that's a really good question. I mean, let's face it. I mean, I don't know who they have behind, Nabokov that they feel that comfortable with. I mean, this is a team that, they're on the cusp. They've been on the cusp for a while. They're one of the, certainly in the Western Conference, they're amongst a handful of clubs that is going to compete for the conference title, and they could win a Stanley Cup. So, even if that doesn't happen this year, Nabokov leaves, then where are you? So, I mean, they'd have to feel pretty comfortable about Thomas Reichs or whoever they have in the system. They've done a good job over the years of developing young goalies, but that's a risky proposition. So I would think that Nabokov, there's an excellent chance that he would be staying, depending upon what his desires are as far as wanting to stay and what his desires are as far as the contract. I'll tell you this about Patrick Marleau. If he gets on the open market, I'm sure there's going to be an awful lot of teams interested because, he's a big guy. He's got great speed. I mean, he's got, as you guys know, he's kind of a quiet guy, and he leads kind of by example in his play. And, I think last year in the playoffs, it was unfortunate. He was having a terrific year, and I just think he hurt his knee, and he never really got back to where he needed to be. In the playoffs, but with the salary cap as it is, again, it might come down to whether if Marleau wants to be there. All indications to me on the outside are that he likes being in San Jose and that he's a guy that would be very comfortable staying there. But a lot might just be determined by how things go again this year, because as you saw last year, and I mean, you guys know it better than me. I mean, the pressure is on the Sharks to win and to get to the Stanley Cup Finals and to win the Stanley Cup. And if things were to be disappointing again this year, there might not be a big cry to keep him. But let's face it, he's an asset. And if you don't sign him and, he walks away and you don't get anything for him, that's not good news either. So maybe at the end of the day, both guys do resign and stay there. You just can't afford to let assets like that get away and not get anything in return.
I know that Mike and I were at the Sharks team scrimmage. They do a season ticket holder event before the preseason starts, and we heard that they were getting Manny Malhotra, which really came out of left field for us. Do you have any insight as far as like how that happened, and how did this guy, we really like him as far as a player, how did he sort of exist on the open market this long?
Well, it seems like right now with the salary cap and the collective bargaining agreement that's gone into, I guess we're into the year five now of this system, it seems like you're seeing fewer players that are guys that are in that $2 to $4 million range, particularly forwards. And I think that's just the nature of things. The bigger players are getting more money, the high-end guys, and so teams are having to fill out their roster with either younger players or less expensive players. And the Holtra went on the open market, and from what I understand, the Atlanta Thrashers were very interested in him, and he decided to pass on that. He wanted to go somewhere where he thought he had a better chance to succeed as far as his team goals, and that's kind of always been Manny. I mean, going back to his junior days, I mean, when he came out of junior, he was viewed as, a lot of scouts really liked him because just some intangibles, and he was a big-bodied kid at the time, and he was very smart, and, they liked him for all those reasons, so he opted to go and to wait. San Jose ended up coming in and, signing him. And, that's so far so good. I mean, in the past, in his NHL career, he hasn't really been around too many of those, too many really winning situations. So it's hard to know, how his value will be in the playoffs. But, it seems like he was a nice addition for them, and he kind of he fit a need that they had. And like I said, he's a big guy, and he skates well, and he's got he's pretty much defined as a as a bottom six forward, but a guy that he does he works hard, and he's not going to he's not going to be a problem for you, which in some cases is just as important as some of the other things. So that's how he ended up there, really. It was his decision to wait for a better situation. He turned down Atlanta, and then he ended up going in San Jose. You know, I want to ask you guys one thing, too, because I watched the Sharks game against St. Louis when they blew that lead late, and I was really disgusted by that, the end of that game. And, you know, I know you guys are going to follow it very closely. I mean, was there a fallout from that loss? I know it's a regular season loss, but it was really disappointing for me to see a team that was on the power play that's clearly better than the opponent give up a late goal to tie the game and then lose the game in a shootout. It just seemed like a really disappointing loss, and the kind of loss that you shake your head and go, oh, that's the Shark.
Yeah, that was particularly disappointing, and it's hard to tell if it's a fallout from that game, this sort of slide that they've been on, or the fact that they got blown out so badly against Chicago, a team that suddenly jumped into the top of the West that is suddenly seems to be a major rival of the Sharks. And I think it may be a combination of those two games that sort of put this team on the slide, because they haven't seemed to recover since.
Yeah, we had sort of what we call the blame game, which was when Nabby came out and openly criticized Mark Edward Vlasic in the papers here for not laying down and blocking that shot. And, you know, I don't know. EJ, do you think that's a good thing for Nabby to be calling out Vlasic in the papers here? Can that help? Or we've never really seen that with this team before.
Ever.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it necessarily hurts as long as the guys have a discussion about it at some point. I would say this. I mean, it was hard to single out Vlasic just because the entire group seemed to go brain dead in the last minute of that game. I mean, that was the goal that was scored was on the last of several good opportunities the Blues had. I know they had a 2-on-1 where Navarro made just a terrific save. I think it was on Paul Kariya. So, you know, in that case, you know, you get the goalie right after the game. I saw the interview actually on tape. I was watching the post game, and as soon as I heard him say that, I was kind of like, well, there's something that kind of raised your eyebrow for that, to have a guy criticize a teammate. But, you know, again, put it in context. Nabokov had, you know, really made a couple of great saves at the end of the game. The team as a whole kind of abandoned him. In those late moments, he loses in a shootout. He's probably pretty frustrated, and maybe one of the things that he remembered was seeing Vlasic not, you know, try to take a shot there. So, you know, maybe it's good in the case of the Sharks, where they're always kind of trying to question and wonder why they don't get over the hump. And sometimes it's as simple as something as everybody selling out in the last minute of a game to get something locked down. So maybe the goaltender asking a question in that circumstance, in that context, isn't the worst thing in the world, because really, I could see him. I might have been a lot more disgusted by that, and I'm sure Todd McClellan was none too happy to see that just total breakdown with a man advantage against an inferior opponent in your own zone.
EJ, we want to thank you for being on the podcast. We got one last question for you before you go. You know, we've seen some pretty dirty players come through here in the last month, you know, with Edmonton and Dallas. So we want to ask you, in all of sports, who gets away with more dirty play? We've got Jean-Francois Jacques, Steve Ott, or Tiger Woods?
Well, I mean, let's face it. I mean, I can't speak for every man in the world, but you know what? We've all had our transgressions at some point in our life, so we'll leave it at that. I would say that Steve Ott gets away with a lot of dirty stuff. And he's really good at irritating, and there are times that he does things that I just shake my head. I mean, I know here in the East, I mean, we get to see, you know, the magnificent work of the Sean Averys and the Matt Cooks. And those type of characters, and, you know, Daniel Carcillo, those kind of guys. And, you know, to me, I could do without all of them. I'm really amazed sometimes at some of the antics that, you know, some of those guys get away with. But of the names you mentioned, I would think that Ott is the one that stands out to me. And, you know, the thing about Steve Ott is there's times when he can be a really effective player, like most of those guys. But
right. There
are other times that, boy, they just go... They go way over the line, and you just shake your head.
We've got a young enforcer out here. I don't know if you've seen him play much. We really like him, called Fraser McLaren. And Ott was really running his mouth at McLaren during the last game, and McLaren was ready to go, and Ott ran on skates on ice faster than I've seen anybody run towards his bench so he could avoid that. We would have liked to have seen that one go down.
Well, you know, I didn't see this particular circumstance, so it's hard for me to really be, make a fair comment. I do remember in that game there was a hell of a shootout in the game where the both goalies were terrific. I mean, Nabokov was great, and Marty Turco, I think if he poke-checked one more guy, it was going to be, you know, they were going to have to make a law about that, outlaw that. But I didn't see that particular play, but, you know, I'm sure if... you know, when the time comes, I mean, you know, McLeod, I know he's been on kind of the roller coaster back and forth to Worcester, but, you know, I'm sure he'll have his moments that he'll be able to get a hold of Mr. Ott and they can kind of get acquainted.
EJ, senior writer for ESPN, the magazine, ESPN.com, and on NHL Live, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. You know, all the best, and, you know, we'll do it again sometime down the road.
Sounds great. Happy holidays.
Thanks, EJ.
Same to you, guys.
So, dude, EJ's back again. Good times. He had some more insights, as he always seems to have.
I think he seems to be in tune with the dudes as far as, you know, the Sharks. The big question mark is Mark Edward Vlasic.
Yeah.
Is he going to stand up or is he going to sit down? You know, and that's the key roster decision that needs to be made right now. If the Sharks are going to lean on Vlasic, are they going to sink or swim with Vlasic, or are they going to look to actively upgrade? And we'll just have to wait and see. I think they need to be looking to actively upgrade, use their depth at forward to do that. But I certainly am not Doug Wilson.
Yes. Thank God for that, because who knows, we may be on the jobbing block pretty soon. But we do have some questions. You can always email us at questions@dudesonhockey.com if you want us to cover anything on the podcast. You want to get your take in, or you want to ask us what our take is. We got an email from Dimitri, and he says, am I the only one who notices all the mistakes that Blake has been making since coming back from injury? And do you think he's still playing through pain and that's the reason for all the screw-ups? Or is he going through a midlife crisis right now?
Wow.
Yeah.
Ouch. Well, Blake did turn 40 last week, right?
That's true. I guess that's about the right time.
Yeah. I was kind of looking at the numbers here, dude. And, you know, I think I'm of the opinion, and I think you agree that, you know, and EJ said as much, you know, if you're going into the playoffs and you're going to be asking Rob Blake to play 22 plus minutes, that's unreasonable. That's not something he should be asked to do at this point in career. But Rob Blake has always been one of the master shot blockers in the NHL. And if you look at his totals, he's averaging almost two a game still, which would put him near the top in the NHL if he had played every game. So as far as that goes, that part of his game isn't gone. But have you noticed any sort of deterioration in his positioning, dude? Or what's your take?
I think he's just a little bit slower. I mean, it's just that's the kind of stuff that happens when you get up there in age.
He's never been built for speed.
No, but I mean, you know, he was a little bit quicker early on in his career. There's no doubt about that. And now he really has to be a little bit more careful when he does certain things. You know, pinching at the blue line has to be done with extreme caution now because he's not going to be able to get himself back in the play. I was worried about that shoulder because we have seen his offensive production drop off. And to see him score that rip of a slap shot against Marty Turco, even though it was a little bit of a soft goal from Turco's standpoint, I'm happy to see Blake starting to bomb away again. And I think that does mean he's actually healthy, Dimitri. I think he's okay again, but it's just a question of, do we have the right expectations for a guy that's 40 years old? Sure, he's a Norris winner. He's a Hall of Famer, but he is 40. So, you know, we need to, you know, temper that and understand what that really means on this team. And he's a great role player. He's a great guy in certain situations. But you can't put the whole team on his shoulders and expect him to take the Sharks to the promised land because that's just not going to be a winning strategy for them. So,
but that's the whole point, is that right now, that is the role that he's in.
I mean, right now,
he's averaging the third most minutes on this team, you know, as far as a blue liner when he's healthy. And, you know, it just goes back to, you know, can we really have that sort of expectation from him? And I think the answer is no.
Right.
And hopefully that's going to be addressed. Can he help this team win? Absolutely.
Right.
With his leadership, and he's very effective on the power play, and he's still a good player. But I don't know if he's the answer back there.
He's not the cornerstone of a Stanley Cup winning franchise.
Not right now.
Dimitri also asks, what do you think about Slava Fetisov playing a game in the KHL at age of 51? Well, you know, I think Fetisov's a little bit old for the Sharks. I mean, no, I'm just kidding. Back in the day, I was in the mid-90s when the Sharks weren't doing so hot. I was a Sharks fan, of course, but I also loved the Devils because I love Scott Stevens. And Slava Fetisov was a defenseman for the New Jersey Devils. So I have a soft place in my heart for Slava Fetisov. And I understand, and I wasn't able to watch him earlier in his career because I don't think he came into the NHL until he was older than 30. But a lot of people say he was perhaps maybe the best Russian defenseman ever And some people say the best defenseman ever. So Slava Fetisov is certainly a elder statesman in the hockey world, period. I don't really understand why he would play a game. I don't know if I would... Is gimmick the right name? I mean, because Gordie Howe did this, right? Gordie Howe came out and played in his 50s for the WHL or something. I don't really get it. Maybe someone can give me some context on why he came back to play a game. Because, I mean, he's in Congress or something in Russia. And he's the head of the Russian national team. He's the one setting the roster, I believe, for the Olympics coming up. So I don't quite get it. I can appreciate he's still in shape to skate around the ice. But it sounded more like a dog and pony show, really, than anything to me. Maybe I'm just being insensitive about it.
I think the bigger question to me is, when I read that Chris Chelios turned down an NHL job offer because he was having such a good time playing in the AHL for the Chicago Wolves, I would rather be playing top 4 minutes for an AHL team than playing bottom 2 minutes for an NHL team. That's what he said.
Yeah.
Dude, does JR need to call and slap him around a little bit?
Maybe.
Who do you think called him, dude? Guess. What team would want this man? Would it be the San Jose Sharks?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, they picked up Jay Leach.
Yeah, but he's not 40. Jay Leach is only 28.
That's true. Hey, listen, we haven't talked about Jay Leach yet.
No, we haven't.
Jay Leach saw his first action of the year in a Sharks uniform against the Dallas Stars at home. Right. Dude, what's your assessment?
Competent. What can you say? I mean, this is not a guy that's going to wow you in any way. He seemed to be a good skater. He seemed to be a big guy that's willing to use his size. There was a moment at which I think Dan Boyle got checked, and it might have been by Steve Ott.
It was.
And Jay Leach, with no hesitation, Boyle was ready to go, and Boyle would have dropped or defended himself just fine. But Jay Leach understood his role is to step in and do the right thing and fight that battle so your stars don't have to. And he did it with no hesitation. So he's the player that I'm glad he is. It seems like the Sharks got him for one reason only, and it's an ongoing theme with the Sharks, for salary cap reasons. Because of the situation of the salary cap, he was picked up on re-entry waivers from Montreal did, and then Montreal waived him. So the Sharks only have to pay that lower figure, which is about half the minimum contract value for the NHL. So this is almost a unique situation. There's nobody else that the Sharks could trade for that would have such a low cap figure. So that seems to be the impetus of...
Are you calling Jay Leach a cheap date?
Yes. Yes, I am.
He is.
Yeah.
You're right. I was impressed. Listen, I think it's very possible that we could see him start to take Jocelyn's minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's not out of the realm of possibility, dude. What else do we got questions here?
We got from Chris Boston. Do you think the current slump is a result of the blowout loss to Chicago? If not, have you been happy with the way the team has responded to that loss? Well, Chris, we talked about that with EJ. Yeah, I think it was the Chicago thing, and EJ brought up a good point. Yeah, blowing a lead in the waning seconds of a game when you're on the power play. I think those two things, could have sort of set the ball in motion downhill. I don't really like the way the team has responded to the loss. They can't seem to score goals right now. It's not really on any one person's shoulders because Marlowe and Healy are both still in the top five in terms of goals, but it's just the Sharks kind of aren't getting it done, and it seems like lack of urgency, lack of hard skating. I don't know what it is. You know, it's this intangible thing that we got frustrated with the Sharks last season, and they sort of seem to fall into that rut again. But it's still early. You know, they can get out of it.
But, dude, I do not like the Sharks' record against the four other best teams. And yeah, you know what? I'm putting the Wings in that category, right?
Okay.
I'm not discounting the Wings. Against the Wings, Kings, mm-hmm. Hawks, and Flames, mm-hmm. the Sharks are 1-4-2.
Yeah.
That's not acceptable.
That's not
acceptable. They're not able to beat the good teams right now, and they're not able to beat the mediocre teams either. The other thing that really, I think, has bothered me more than the blowout, because the blowout's going to happen to every team at one point. The Sharks have lost four games that they've been leading into the third period.
Yeah, that's not good.
Dude, you know how many the Blackhawks have lost? Zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Since November 1st, zero. Sharks have lost four.
Yeah.
So that's good teams don't blow games like that. Sharks have blown four in the last 6 weeks. So not good.
All right, more questions from Chris. With the Worcester Shuttle in full swing and our problems on defense, why have we not seen the return of Jason Demers? He's been playing great for Worcester. And before he left, he was starting to be mentioned in the Calder conversation. Why not give Nick Petrecki a shot? And he couldn't be worse than the Jocelyn Huskins pairing. I think both of those answers are salary cap answers as well. I mean, that's what Jay Leach is here to do. I believe Jason Demers is making roughly $1 million. I know the cap figure for Nick Petrecki is about $1 million a season as well. So I think that's your answer. And we've talked before on this show about how we want young guys to get enough minutes. And do you really want Jason Demers or Nick Petrecki coming into the NHL and playing 12 minutes a night? That's just, you know, if they can get Jay Leach and he can be a healthy scratch for 3 days and then play a game and be reasonably effective, thinking long term, that might be a better play for the Sharks as a franchise. I'm just throwing that out there. What do you think, dude?
Well, I think if there was a major injury to somebody, you know, that we would see one of those guys come back up again. But I agree with you. They seem to be sheltering Nick Petrecki a little bit right now, playing him. He's now worked his way up to the top pairing in Worcester, playing with Danny Gruel.
Yeah, sort of.
He's not journeyman. getting any power play time, but he seems to be getting the, a large chunk of the even strength minutes. He's near the top in penalty minutes on that team. Not doing so hot in plus minus, but that team's also on a win streak also, so the Worcester is pretty dangerous. And Demers has been playing well. As Chris said, you know, I'd be curious, you know, since Chris is out in Boston, you know, I'd love to hear from you. You know, have you been able to go take in a game?
Right.
Have you seen, are these games on TV? I'm not sure. So Chris, let us know if you've, we'd love to hear some information about Nick Petrecki, because you know, all we see are the stats online and they don't really tell the whole story for a guy who's more of a defensive player.
And there's no ice time minutes, which we found out for the AHL. So we can't even really know for sure how much he's playing and in what situations.
Can I throw out one more depressing thing, dude?
Okay.
Do you know what the Sharks' record at home, if you take overtime losses as a regular loss? 8-7.
Oh, so they're like 500.
But that's why you kind of feel crappy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, 8-7. That's not great. Their overall record, if you take overtime losses as a loss, is 19-15.
Mm-hmm.
So they're dangerously approaching average here. And, you know, when you take a look at a team like, you know, New Jersey, that is 22-9, there's getting to be a big gap here between the Sharks and some of the elite teams in the NHL. So can they right the ship? Sure. But they got to do it pretty soon, I think, to snap out of this funk.
I hope so. They're going to have a lot of opportunity. They got Chicago coming, playing in Chicago. They got some games against Anaheim. So hopefully those games.
Is that game in Chicago the biggest game of the year so far?
Oh, absolutely.
So they've got, they need to win that game.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then they've got a huge homestand here where they can really right the ship. They need to get on a little bit of a roll to feel good again. I think, you know, winning 5 or 6 games in a row would really help this team's confidence.
Right. Final question from Chris. I know how you love to get into the minutiae of the CBA. Do you think the same thing that happened to Phil Kessel could happen to Setoguchi next year? Getting some number one draft picks might be the best thing for the team long term. And I don't think we will have the money to pay Seto unless we get a lot of hometown discounts. Interesting question.
Yeah.
My first reaction to that question is not a chance. There's only one Toronto Maple Leafs, right? Brian Burke is willing to make strong moves. He's willing to give up a lot of draft picks to get a guy that he really wants. That guy was Phil Kessel. I don't see a lot of other teams in that position willing to make that kind of risky move. We've seen teams get more and more stingy with draft picks, especially first-round draft picks. And if Seto gets the kind of money we expect, which will probably be in the $4 to $5 million range, they'll have to give up at least one first-round draft pick, and maybe more if he makes more than $5 million. So that's a lot of draft picks. I can't see too many teams wanting to bite for that. So
I think Doug Wilson has a priority list as far as who he's you know, looking to sign. And if Seto's not at the top of that list, I'm hoping that he's going to turn that into a player that we need now, someone who can help us now. Doing this, making this change in the off season, that you know, that's a little bit of you know, delaying what, you know, is needed to be addressed now. And Setoguchi could fetch you quite a return.
Yes, in no season. Doubt about that. No doubt.
So, you know, we'll learn pretty fast who's, you know, between Pavelski, between Seto, but I don't know if they're going to be able to get that kind of return. Dude, I've got a story for you.
Okay, story.
I was at the mall today doing some Christmas shopping.
The mall.
I was at the mall.
Good story so far.
And it's in San Jose.
Uh-huh.
That's it. No, here's awesome. The story, dude. Here's the story. Oh, okay. I just finished doing a little shopping for the wife here, and I'm walking down the mall, and I see Devin Setoguchi walking right towards me.
He just chilling in the mall.
No, he's doing some shopping. He had some bags.
Do you have an Orange Julius?
No Orange Julius, but he had a pretzel.
Good.
No pretzel.
Okay.
All right. So he's walking towards me. I kind of freeze up here for a little bit. We made eye contact and I could tell in his eyes, he's like, this guy's going to say something to me, right? You know,
that look.
Yeah. And he kind of smiled at me, yeah. You know, and I said, I was, you know, thinking of all the things I could say. I was like, hey, you know, Devin, big Sharks fan, you know, I've got my own Sharks podcast. We'd love to have you on. He'd say, hey, that'd be great. I said, hey, here's our business card. Give us a call sometime. Listen, if you guys want to come sit up in my box sometime, I'd love to come up and hang out. This is what came out of my mouth. Devin said a Gucci. That's what I said.
That's it.
That's what I said.
That's it.
That's what I said.
And what'd he say?
Hey.
And then he walked past.
Yeah.
Did he break into a trot?
He ran.
Yeah.
He ran. This was the other really funny thing, and I don't know if this is true or not. Before I saw Setoguchi, I saw who I thought was Tori Mitchell.
Oh, really? It
all
could
right?
have been.
Okay. But Setoguchi was kind of dressed up. Mm-hmm. This dude who looked like Tori Mitchell, not dressed up. Like, it was like these weird workout shorts, sneakers, and like a bizarre shirt. I'm not saying it was Tori Mitchell, but it would be funny if they were there together. I know that they're roommates, right?
Yeah. Well, so, dude, I'm glad your fine arts education is really coming to good use here.
I was so... Afterwards, I stood like in the same spot, you know, for about 30 seconds going, I
really blew that.
I'm an idiot. Oh, I'm an idiot. And then, you know, that lady asked me if I wanted to try some hand cream. You know,
and you said yes.
The worst part about going to the mall at the holidays is all those people at the kiosks who I feel... I mean... You know, how it, that job has just got to, that's got to suck.
Yeah.
You know, hey, would you like to, you know, can I tighten your eyeglasses, sir?
Unless you're Devin Setoguchi. Unless, you know.
I didn't see him, you know, patronizing the kiosk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you think he'll ever go back to the mall again?
I believe so. I you know, you were pretty harmless. I mean, if you tried to follow him, hey, wait, you know, it's like, you know, you don't want to
sign my chest.
Yeah. Well, dude, I hope you'll take this as a lesson to act better next time. Some of these lessons have to be hard won.
Thank you, dude.
Yeah. And I think that takes us to the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening to Dudes on Hockey. We are at dudesonhockey.com. We blog there as well, so check us out. You can friend us on Facebook. The link is also at dudesonhockey.com. And we will be back again for a special holiday edition of Dudes on Hockey next week. So we will talk to you then.
Dude, I'm going to hang out at Subway Sandwiches and wait for Joe Thornton.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.